It's the Daily Talk Show, episode 810.
Happy Monday, Gronks. What's happening? What's going on?
JJ. How are you feeling, TJ? With the so yesterday we did the show before there were the announcements in Victoria. How are you feeling post announcement?
Yeah. I mean, I was walking yesterday or Saturday afternoon. Went for a beautiful walk, just an hour. Mm-hmm. That's the rules. It was within lovely though. Afternoon sun. It was one of the best weekends I reckon weather-wise we've had in 4 months.
It's beautiful.
And I really wanted to go and take a photo because there's like I walk along the highway, but there's like a big wall that sort of is a sound barricade between the houses and the highway. And you can see just over the wall, there's one of these signs that it's a digital sign that they give updates for people driving on the highway. And I just thought that sort of the picture of, I was thinking about, think to the future. Mm-hmm. 40 years from now, photo of a sign that says, get
have
tested,
you had your
stay
COVID
home.
Test? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, get tested, stay home. I thought mm-hmm. it's like that would be iconic, like thinking back. The signs have since changed, so I can't mm-hmm. get the photo that I wanted. But the new sign says curfew has, or something like 8 p.m. curfew, mm-hmm. which is the new rule that's come in. 8 p.m., you got to be in your house. There's no one out. And they've locked it down because stage 4 restrictions have been put into place in Victoria. But, not much has changed. We've been home. So,
it reminds me, the sign thing reminds me of when the first wave happened and we went into lockdown. I did Alone Outside, which was a series I did on Instagram. And I woke up early every morning and I took photos. And it was that balance of, I wanted to capture people outside on their own.
Yeah.
That's one of the main things. But then it was very tempting to have the shots of the playgrounds with all of the rope around them and things like that. It does feel like when you're in it, it does feel like we'll look back. It almost feels a little bit like 9/11. Remember when 9/11 happened?
Yeah.
And it's like this is a moment that's changed the world forever. Do you get that sense?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But the photos won't feel like that for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I think that's when you'd really sort of know. And so if you, it's like the person I'm so impressed that takes a photo of themselves every day for 10 years. I mean, that's just a narcissist. But the ones that do it for doing the the stop motion where they're growing, they're like evolving, their face is changing. It's like that's foreseeing something in the future. So, I mean, that's why Google Photos now, I've just got thousands in there. Hopefully, I'll be able to look back in 10, 15 years, be like, oh, wow, remember that time?
So, it's a very interesting social experiment. Mm. It does remind me a little bit of the Netflix documentary that we watched, Three Identical Strangers.
Oh.
Now, I don't know if the problem is that I don't know if you can talk about it without revealing a bunch of spoilers.
No, you actually can't. You just have to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's in the title, obviously, Three Identical Strangers. You watch the trailer. You know, I have a pet peeve, dude. Mm-hmm. Netflix, you know how they got trailers? They're not the trailers that were made for the movies, as in for when a film was released in the cinema. It can sometimes be like a trailer that sort of just, I don't know, they must have cut it together.
Just like a scene, just like a couple of scenes chucked together.
I watched this trailer and I was like, sorry, I don't need to watch the film anymore because you just fucking gave me the whole thing in 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Like legit play by play. Mm. And then you watch it like, yeah, I knew that. I hate that shit.
I hate trailers. I mean,
I like understanding the premise of something. Someone's been taken, they're trying to find that person, whatever. But
you're
not
describing
just
taken?
Easy. Yeah. Key got taken. Guy went after them. Mm-hmm. Killed everyone. That's all you need to know. And if you love those things, love it.
And so I watched Big over the weekend, which wasn't on Netflix. We're getting into the we've gone into the ISO period where we're like, fuck, we actually need to look beyond Stan, beyond Netflix, beyond all of that other stuff and just treat yourself. Even though you're paying fucking a lot in subscriptions, you still manage to think about the movie that you want to watch that's not part of any of them.
I mean, there's plenty. You were watching Big, Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. I said, you got to watch Sleepless in Seattle. Real mm-hmm. tearjerker, but sort of makes you feel good as well. Sort of a love story. But these are some old... These are 32-year-old... Big was made in 88.
Really? Well, the thing with like Big, it's a fucked up film, don't you think?
I haven't seen Big. I've seen Sleepless in Seattle.
Well, so there's like a relationship.
It's
like
a classic.
She essentially... there's a relationship that goes on and they're making out and she doesn't know that it's the boy, like the fucking 13-year-old boy who's grown up. It's a bit perverted.
Oh.
But anyway, yeah.
Yes, yesterday, one sort of sight that sort of is quite startling is going to something like a Shoppo, Doncaster Shopping Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, one of the biggest in Melbourne. And you see this absolutely, it's like there's fuck all people there. There's
really? Nothing, I was expecting there would be big lines or whatever, people preparing, getting their black beans.
At the supermarket, mm-hmm. but supermarkets are busy in general. But just seeing the dormant, fucking nothing there, the Apple store, they've removed every product off the shelves. And so it's really? Like a store full of tables and they've literally dismantled all of the phones that were on display. Like they haven't just left it all out.
Do you know how much those tables cost?
The tables at the Apple stores?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're big bits. They're big pieces.
Have a guess.
Fucking ginormous. I mean, if I was just to throw a number, I reckon like 4K a table. No. You could easily spend 4K on a big table.
No, you've underbaked it.
Underbaked it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How much are they?
They're custom made in Canada and from a special wood and they cost 10 grand a piece.
10 grand a pop.
Yeah.
And so I reckon there's 3, 6, 9, 12. I reckon there's 15 tables in the one at Doncaster. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of cash
150,
in the
150K of tables. I mean, they are the most wealthy company.
Hang on, it's a fun thing because now, fuck, depends who you're reading. Because now I'm reading another one that says $80,000. So this is on Reddit, and we know only good things, legit info comes from Reddit. So the cement bricks that outlined the stores are handcrafted from Germany. Each wooden table, the ones for Genius Bar and iPhone, Apple Watch, iPad now cost $80,000 per table.
Oh,
I thought it was, I'd heard 30 grand. They're crazy though, because they've got all these like special features of like being able to, like they've got a cash register built into some of them. Have you seen that? Where
yeah,
it's like,
yeah. The Genius Bar at the back for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there is, they're impressive.
It's a big table.
Yeah. Wow. So anyway, I went to yesterday. I mean, we're all trying to save a few bucks.
Mm-hmm.
We've all sort of taken a hit to the hip pocket in terms of, you know, work and revenue and wages. And so I thought, you know, $15 haircut for Bodhi, I can do it myself.
Great.
I can do it myself. And I've got like a shaver. It's not the beard trimmer that you used on your head that then you fucked and had to go get a new one.
Mm-hmm.
It's a legit, but it's old. It's a legit head shaver. And so I use it for my beard because my beard is the thickness of someone's hair on their head. That's what I need to sort of attack.
So does it have the little, the bottles of oil? Because I never know what to actually do with those little oil bottles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's got the bottle of oil and you're just meant to like, when it's off, just run it once across the blade and then turn it on and it just lubes up the blades. Really? Anyway, I got Bodhi downstairs, got him onto his little chair and we put like a little cute sort of throw over him so it looked like he was at the barbershop and I got stuck into it. He lost his shit and so I had to give him my phone, which meant he was like had my phone in his hand with his head looking down. So it's not ideal.
Yeah.
It's like you want a barber or a hairdresser wants you to look at yourself in the mirror so you got that nice, you know, they're getting the sort of symmetry, they're trying to sort of cut it all properly. I got into it and I regretted it as I shaved one side of his head off. So it's like he literally just had like one side was a two and it sort of blended back into a mullet at the back.
I mean, this is not too dissimilar to what happened with me, is it? So do you have a little bit more empathy for what happened? Like you're trying to do the right thing. You don't want to have to go to the hairdresser.
Well, I committed and so I had to keep going. I had the scissors, I had everything going and I ended up getting as far as shaving the back, the sides, and trying to do a little bit of a, you know, trying to sort of trim fade. The top. I got to a point. He looks like an absolute goose.
And so what have you done? And, have you buzz cut it?
Hence why we went to Doncaster Shopping Centre to go to Just Cuts to get fixed up.
How much? Do they at least give you a deal? Surely you've done half the work.
I mean, it cost $22 in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so annoying. Bucks.
Were you pissed off though at the time?
Oh, I felt
because you're laughing
felt insecure. You know, like I really could.
Was he wearing a hat or a beanie or something going to the shop?
No, this is the thing. You can't just. Me, I just would have whacked a hat on for 6 months.
Yeah.
He is a child that didn't give a shit about his hair in the first place. Literally was more interested in the phone and what that had to offer than what I was doing to his head. And so I felt funny for him. But then I was like, this kid doesn't even feel anything.
Yeah.
How funny is it that we totally identify with what our hair looks like and it's part of our fucking identity?
For you, you didn't I mean, give a it's shit. Very much a jacket identity thing, right? You've got great hair.
Well, when people tell you you have amazing hair, you walk into an office. I walked into the Bastion who we had, Fergus Watts, who's CEO of Bastion. I was up in Sydney at the head office of Bastion. Walked in with Jack, his brother, who's, one of the owners. And he's like, Tommy Jacket, best hair in the business. Welcome. I mean, that does a lot to your ego. Anyway, the lady said to me, she said, oh, not bad. Good try. I'm glad you've come in to let us fix it up. And so he walked out. He walked in as an 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. He walked out as a 15 out of 10. That kid is an absolute... He looks so good. The sharpest haircut in Bulleen.
They so even you didn't fuck it enough. Like, so that you left enough for them to be able to fix it.
I mean, what they gave him was what I was trying to do, but I got it. I basically say that I am the guy who dug the hole for the pool and then the pool builders came and installed the pool.
Yeah, you loosen the jar.
I loosen the jar. But no, he's happy as Larry and he's looking $1 million.
Oh, that's good. I was thinking about experiments. So, if you watch this three identical strangers, you'll think about, experiments and things like that.
Yeah.
And then also everything that's happening at the moment with vaccines, people going into trials with these things. I read a book called Rebel Without a Crew, and it's about a filmmaker and what he does to try and get his films made. And he was it's Rodriguez, the director, and he was talking about doing all of these medical things like trials to make cash. So he could use that money to make films. And so
there is like, do you want to be a part of this study? You can be paid to. And I've always thought, fuck it. Who are they relying on? Desperate uni students that have no time to work but could sort of dedicate 4 hours on a Saturday to be injected. I don't know personally anyone who's done clinical trials of anything.
But there's a bunch of people who, like, that's their shtick. They just go from clinical trial to clinical trial. Apparently, there's ones around, like, sleeping. Like, if there's a bit of sleep deprivation involved. I remember hearing one where it's like you have to sleep at a university and then they wake you up every half an hour or whatever, and that's obviously you get more cash for that.
How many times you get woken up, you get cash?
Yeah, I don't know. But like, it's interesting. Like, I wonder what would you do from a medical trial perspective for a bit of cash?
Yeah. Mate, not much. Really? Not much
not
at
desperate
all.
Enough.
No. I mean, yeah, I guess. So what? So the people we deem as desperate that help pave the way for technology and medical research. Like,
shout
heroes.
Out to rats.
Like, shout out to rats. I mean, this is why
mice?
They
mice
do it.
Close to rats, aren't
they? Well, you bring it to the first COVID-19 trials. Like, these are already underway. There is thousands of people being injected with something. How do you... Like, you could say that the people that are desperate that need something are willing to take it, but there's also people that aren't. desperate, and they still do it. I mean, absolute hero. They don't. These people don't get enough. There should be some sort of like page where it's like things that have really sort of come off, like heroes. They get awards.
They get awards. I wonder ones that have gone bad. How many people have died through clinical testing deaths due to clinical? Do you reckon? Surely, well, like from an ethical perspective, they're only trialing 88 clinical trial volunteers died in 4 years. here you go. At least 1,000 people who took part in clinical trials over the past 4 years. At least 1,000 people who took part in the clinical trial over the past 4 years have died, and 88 of these deaths were caused by direct side effects of trials, the health ministry told the, I don't even know where this is, Rajasabha last week. So this must be, just trying to see whereabouts, in Mumbai. Okay. So it was in India. I mean, that's pretty, anything that has a death rate to it is a bit fucked.
But I mean, these people are putting themselves forward to hopefully have change. I mean, wouldn't you be like,
well, are they just desperate for cash?
So desperate for cash is one thing, but then I guess if there's money involved, I don't think, maybe not. Maybe they're not all going, this could help change the world. This is like, I need to eat. It's sad, isn't it? I mean, I always think about the mindset you'd need to want to go to war. And you see people with families that decide to go over and serve. One side you've got, I mean, this is helping our country. These are the people that are protecting us, all of that. The other side, you've got a family and your wife, your husband is just stressed out of their mind always. Personally, like, I fall into the category of absolutely not. I couldn't do it to myself and my family. But that's not to say that the people that do it are selfish or anything. It's like
That's the personal sacrifice stuff, right? Like, that's what, like, I think that the service men and women in the US, it's a big thing. Like, it's which I think makes sense. I think that for me, like, it's a hard one to reconcile, but I guess, like, someone has to do it, right? Like, we do need people to be able to do this sort of stuff. Like, what would it look like if we're all like, we're not going to have any military?
Of course. And then it is a belief system. Sacrifice. Yeah, it's a belief system, though, that has to be different to someone like me. Like, you know how you hear people, I've seen people just sort of talking about this before. It's like, no, it was their calling. They felt they needed to do it. It's like all of this stuff is your mind and your belief system in play.
Whereas, maybe part of it is that you are, the likelihood of dying in combat or whatever is low. Maybe that's part of it. So it's like, if you knew that you were going to die serving your country, I wonder what the likelihood, like, so if you're going like kamikaze or whatever it was, where it's like your job is to fucking die, like what the rate of, you know, people signing up would be.
Sign-ups. But I mean, people are still signing up. I've had a bunch of mates in the military.
But then do you think people see it as like from a lifestyle perspective? Because that's what I wonder, right? Like, it's, and that's where maybe I don't connect enough to the personal sacrifice. And I always think of like, oh, it's like a career. It's like, oh, this is fucking, I get to work out all the time. I get to train. I get to be focused. I get to do all of these sorts of things. And just like working in mines or other dangerous jobs, there's a risk and reward associated with it.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a mate who, my age, a year above me, that's, that served, and he lost a few friends, like, you know, right next to him. And he told me that he was young and angry when he wanted to get into it. He wanted to fucking get over there and fight. And so, I mean, that is a mindset that would serve you coping with it. Not to say it's the right mindset, but I could imagine that is one that's quite consistent across the board. Young 20-year-olds that just want to get out there and fight, or they just want to, you know, serve their country. I mean, it's also in the family thing. So my grandfather served in World War II. But you hear back in the day, remember when people would fake their age based on wanting to serve.
Yeah.
And so that's culturally a different thing back then. I mean, you could look at it now. You could either say we're softer now because there's so many more people like you and I, Josh,
than there's iPads.
No. You know. Yeah. All my fingers just been swiping. But then there's the other side of it that's people want to put themselves in the front line to protect the country. I mean, patriotism in this country isn't as prominent as the US.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like there's, you know, people wanting to sort of protect the US more than this country, would you say?
Yeah.
You think so? I mean,
yeah, definitely.
We haven't grown up with it. So if anything now, it's like patriotism for Australia is seen as regressive or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's like...
It's seen as like... What is it? Like not open-minded potentially or... Yeah, it's interesting. Mm. Regressive is like an interesting way of describing it because like...
Well, it's...
Because there are a bunch of... Yeah, I mean, that's how it's sorted. Like it feels like it can be a bit... There's a bit of dogma to it maybe. So it's like you only see these things a certain way and so your life and your experience and your worldview is coloured by patriotism or nationalism or these types of things, which then how can you have empathy for, say, you know, the stuff that's like with Mexico, like it makes a lot of sense to build a wall when you are thinking that you're number one and like you need to protect it at any cost.
Mm. Keep out.
Yeah. In something a little bit... more absurd. Did you hear the was described as appalling Melbourne person fined after driving 320 kilometres for a Big Mac?
Do you reckon they legit got pulled over and said, I'm just on my way to Macca's in fucking Wodonga or wherever it was, Wangaratta?
I feel like this is a great marketing ploy. I'm not saying that McDonald's... you can't hypothesize with anything because everyone takes everything literally. But the I'm not saying McDonald's did that, but imagine like a Red Rooster. Maybe Red Rooster could potentially set up a situation where they get someone to travel very far. So, for instance, it could be going to, or like maybe there's, for instance, what about what about Rami? What's Rami's restaurant called?
Oh,
I've gone blank. We had Rami on the show. It was called, it still is called, I'm just trying to have a look, Riche's.
Riche's.
So I reckon Rami, for instance, being a restaurant owner, like what about he gets someone like us to go to the border of New South Wales and say that, we're just really craving Riche's,
which is only in New South Wales.
Yes.
I mean, it's a good marketing technique. Yeah, I guess you. What's the extent of the fine? It's a $10,000 fine, or low end $1,650, or they tell you to turn around and go home. Right now, it'd be up the $10,000 area. Like they're over stupid gronks. I mean, this is the thing, the trader. So people who streak, or say Vitaly, who is a YouTuber, he actually went to Brazil to the World Cup. He paid for a ticket and he streaked, ran out on the field because he knew the clout and the fame that would come out of that. But I mean, that's going, okay, I'm up for a fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably making money from this video on YouTube. And so I'm going to wear the cost of it, which is, a punt. But it's like, it's just a budget for a video, isn't it? He's just set out the budget. Flights, accommodation and fine.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is that so there'd be people slamming this person and there's been, you know, the I don't agree with what's happening at the moment with like I went on news.com.au and they had the two girls, the photos of them who went to Queensland or whatever. There is that sense of publicly, like I think that we are promoting the publicly shaming of public shaming of people as a mechanism to get people to do the right thing. But I just wonder whether it is extremely destructive to just if you think about like mental health, I feel like there's this overarching mental health. So there's like your individual mental health, and then there's like the health of the public as a whole. And I feel like some of these things that are happening right now, the anger and the unwillingness, I guess, to understand is very strong at the moment, because everyone's just seeing their personal situation and they're saying, okay, based on what I have, what I've done, the sacrifices that I've made, they're judging people based on that, where we're not really clear. Like, we don't know everyone's circumstance.
Mm. I mean, shame is a powerful, powerful emotion, and one that I don't think should be just thrown onto people or just used as some leverage against an individual. There's one thing. I mean, this is just moral. Mm-hmm. It's a moral dilemma. And watching Three Identical Strangers, I felt this torn moral. It was a moral dilemma. Is the perfect explanation of it. It's like, when you watch it, you'll know. But for even this, it's like someone doing the wrong thing, clearly breaking the law when they knew it wasn't, sort of deceptive. And then the other side of like using them as the example, which is bringing a heap of shame to an individual. And we don't want individual. Like, I don't think as a society, it's like, what is a go-to? We don't want people to just be walking around feeling shame all the time about
their behavior. Do you think that there is shame is the thing? Like, I feel like the interactions that I've had with people lately, there's been so much shame in everything, whether it's like how they're feeling or what they're projecting, or it's like there's a level of maybe everyone thinks that everyone should be holding everyone else to account with certain things, or like there is this external looking thing where it's like, let's see what everyone else, like, because everyone's in their cocoon, they're then looking outwards and making judgment calls on everyone else. Do you feel what is the tone, right? Like, if you were to, it's very hard because we're in it, but what's the tone right now, specifically in Victoria, do you think?
The tone of individuals across the board?
Yeah, so I think it's like the public sentiment, public tone, but then look at it, like what sort of what have you learnt from the conversations that you're having with people at the moment?
Anger, blame, out of control, which, I mean, I was just looking at what shame associates with feelings of withdrawal motivations and feelings of distress, exposure, mistrust, powerlessness, worthlessness. Like, powerlessness is one, not that you, you could look at your day and having the power to make decisions on how to shape your day, and a lot of these powers have been taken away from us. We can't decide to go out after 8. And so, from conversations I've had, there's been anger, there's been all of these things. I mean, we spoke about it last week, which is funny because it's probably more relevant this week, and controlling your controllables. I think we're really going to get a good understanding of that now, because the benefit of the anger is so disempowering. I don't think power is within anger, especially when you can't channel it to something. You know, you could say a fighter who channels his anger into the ring is when it really is put to good use, but it's still a powerful, highly emotive emotion. Like, it's controlling. And so how can you drop back? I've had some conversations where people are very frustrated.
And so there's that saying where it's like a misery loves company. If you were to take that misery loves company and apply it to what's happening now, does it resonate, or do you think that there's something in that?
Oh, I mean, if you've got something in common could be that you are angry, and so then two people that are angry about the situation.
But do two people angry, like, because what I wonder is, it's like two angry people, it doesn't like cancel it out and mean that it's happy. It just like doubles the anger,
no,
doesn't it?
No, I know. Yeah. I don't know if it leads anywhere or if it brings any solution to anything. And so
then like I wonder the part of, for me, I'm like no disrespect to anyone, but I don't know if I'm willing to enter in to it. Like I'm not, I don't know. Like I think I'm past the stage of, entering into the anger, because like I think that it's almost, you feel like you need to. So you're hearing someone being distressed about something and you're trying to empathize or trying to understand. Mm. But then there's also the reality of like, if you're not feeling that, how do you sort of protect where you're sitting emotionally so that you don't enter into that world?
Yeah, I mean, anger is a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, could be produced instantly as a response, and you couldn't even catch it, and you don't even realize it, and then you're just in the middle of it. Or it could be like I've had a lot of anger in my life. I think when I was younger, as a coping mechanism. But then, so if you have someone, like you don't get anger in the traditional sense. You blow up, but I don't think anger is a coping mechanism of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, maybe I think
the conversation between someone like you and someone who's angry is not good for either parties.
Yeah,
the angry person isn't getting anything from you, and they're still feeling that feeling, and then you're feeling a different one. And so, yeah, I mean, this is, think about that as a concept of two people with these kind of feelings in this time. There's going to be so many clashes, and so people are going to be walking out of their day thinking, fuck, I had the worst interaction with blah blah blah.
And so what about like if you didn't enter in? So what I'm like, I think that one thing that maybe a lot of people can relate to is, it's like, have you had a conversation in the last week where a person came to you with a certain emotion, a certain feeling, and you felt in that moment that you either needed to enter into it, and I think that that's like the default, is it's like someone comes to you. So say if you're in a car and someone like holds down their horn, that makes you, they've transferred a feeling that they have over to you, and then you have some sort of response. You have it like an act, like if someone fucking holding their horn down, I can't help but have a feeling. And so how do we have empathy for people but also not allow their emotional situation sort of rub off onto us?
Yeah, I think it's a challenge. It's a level of awareness that it's hard to to get to. Like because the emotion will arise. It will be the reaction. I think it's very far down the line where you've got to a point where you've removed an emotional response. Because I think we are going to have emotional responses. You fucking break something of your own, you know, drop a glass and it's going to smash and it will instantly give you a reaction. I don't think you get to a point where you're just like, it was what it was. And so once it arises, it's what you do with it, because you don't need to enter into it. So you could blow up in the car and then go, okay, there it is. Hello.
And so then
thanks for coming.
So is social media or those, like every single post and every single caption, whether it's good, bad or indifferent, it is someone projecting an emotional state. So even if we do something like the Daily Talk Show, how we're going, we're celebrating, we have transferred our happy emotion or our celebration onto everyone else. And so then if you think about like a feed, if you think about a news feed on social media, we are having the equivalent of like hundreds of cars tooting their horns and we're like reacting and responding. It's like when you have it, like you can only have, you know, one car in front of you in a lane, right? Or you can have, there's only like, you can't have that many cars around you that you can actually be taking control of or responsibility for from like how you're feeling. Whereas like this is like you're zoomed out and all of a sudden you are responsible or you feel the effect of every single one of these cars and every, like what every single one of them's doing. And so that's what I wonder with from a social media perspective. I think there's like a piece of work that I've done in starting to reset and identify. It's like the screen time stuff. I haven't worked out exactly what it looks like yet, but it's like, man, there was so when I when I went away or whatever, when I was overseas for 4 months, I actually didn't talk to, like, it was just Bree and I was doing the show with you, but it's like you don't actually you don't talk to that many people day to day, and then you come back and not much has changed. And I think for me, it's like a there's definitely a simplification for my own mental health, where it's like I think that you can feel responsible for if you follow 1,000 people all of a sudden. Like, how many times do you, like, you've met someone, you follow them on Instagram, and now all of a sudden you're entering into how they feel about how Dan Andrews is doing, or how, like, what we should be doing. And so it's like, for me, it's nothing personal, but I reckon I'm someone who is highly sensitive to that stuff. And I probably...
Go on. And think about the operating system, so the normal operating system that is manifested based on what you've just said, all the input from every person, whether you're friends with them or not, your social media friends, that becomes a normal. And so it is a challenge to pull yourself out of that, because it is requiring a different... what you will know is it is a more positive approach, but the other one, positive or negative, a normal becomes a normal. And so that stimulus and being fucking highly emotive and reactive to what people are saying in your ether is still just the way you've been operating. So it's like, it's so hard, because you go one way hard and you're like, oh, fuck, getting out is hard as well to the other side. But it'll all still happen. There will be still moments. But if you can just fucking dial that noise down, it's so beneficial.
And I think that, like, you read, as you read, like, I've been reading some autobiography stuff, and then I think about who I respect from, like, the craft or what they've done or what they've done for an industry or whatever it is, and they don't have the capacity to have that many things going on at once, like that many conversations. So, the reason I bring it up is I think there's probably a lot of people that feel the same, where it's like, hang on, I'm going on social media and I'm consuming this stuff about, from someone who I haven't actually seen in person for 8 years, or every time I speak to this person, it makes me feel a certain way. And I think that this time can teach us that all of these things are optional. Like, YOLO. There's something so empowering about being like, oh, like, you don't need to enter into this stuff. Like, you can, you don't have to have a strong opinion on everything. And if you don't have a strong opinion on everything, it's probably because you don't know everything. And it's, I think it becomes difficult for people who think they do know everything and they think that they could, you know, run the country better than, you know, any world leader. It's an interesting time, but I think that potentially that stuff, all of that noise, I feel like maybe I wish I had identified it earlier, because I've definitely done it, right? Like, I did the whole going off social media and things like that, but just identifying, like, oh, what is it actually, what's that response doing? What is the constant being accessible? Like, I like the idea of fucking being hard to...
There's an empathy access.
Yeah, yeah, fuck it. Like, do you think that you're accessible?
Yeah.
What does accessible mean to you?
Well, accessible to friends. I don't know. It's just I ignore some messages that I get sometimes. Mm-hmm. Not text messages usually. I feel sort of guilty about those, but messages in general coming through. But... yeah, I don't know. I think we deal with the noise differently, for just our own versions of it. The empathy for yourself, though, is to know that it does. Like, it is you. So you saying, I wish I knew this earlier. Or I, you know, it's like it takes time for, to mm-hmm. learn something for the penny to drop. Light bulb moment it is. It just has to be the way it is. I think,
and it's the equivalent. I guess it's like using a metaphor. It's not too dissimilar to your phone, and you've got 100 apps open, and you're wondering, why is my battery running out? Why are all these things happening? And then you're like, oh fuck, I've got every app on this phone open, and so you I'm in the process right now of closing them all down to get to a point where it's like, I actually don't want to be like. And this comes out of like, it doesn't have to be crazy at work. It's like busyness. Like, how much of this is, how much of the stress, the busyness, the responding quickly, the being accessible, how much of it's actually moving the needle in a positive direction for you in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's noisy, so it feels like there's progress. But if you reassess what the progress is, mm-hmm. always on, always available.
If you gave yourself the job... So, for instance, like using like the car or road analogy, like you see cars going past, there's an intersection, right? There's not one point where I think that it's my response. If I see cars struggling, it's not like you go into the middle of the road and start directing traffic. But it feels like what can sometimes happen is it's like, that's like a job that could be done. Yeah. And so we're just entering, if we see a problem, we think, okay, we'll enter into it and solve it. And so... In some ways, I feel like I've just been direct, like I've ended up on a street corner or an intersection. It's like fucking Southeast Asia where there's just fucking someone there, and you know, fucking 100,000 motorbikes and stuff. And it's just, it's realizing of like, oh, hang on, like I don't need to, this isn't my job. And it's nothing personal. But the reason I bring it up is because I feel like I can't be alone. And if you're feeling a certain way, if you're feeling like the weight's on your shoulders, or you feel like people are asking too much of you, or like there is the other option, which is just like, oh, I'm not entering into it. And that's, and there is something in self-preservation as a means to be generous. It's not about self-preservation to be selfish. It's about you're the best, you can be the best version of yourself if you can enable some sort of filter system that works for you.
Yeah, I love it. It's a good way to start your Monday.
Yep.
Take a chill.
Anything else? Any other bits and pieces?
Oh, it's another lovely day in Melbourne, so mm-hmm. happy about that.
Yeah,
That's about it.
Great. Okay. All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your day. We'll be. It's just going to be you and I for the week. We ended up shifting a few guests because we feel during this time it's like. We went to two episodes a day last time. We're definitely not going to do that. But there's definitely something beneficial in us sussing this out. And as these big extreme things happen, aversion's happening anywhere, you know, everywhere in the world right now. And so hopefully you can get something out of our chats.
Things are changing. Lots of announcements in Victoria today. So I like it.
Yeah. Look after yourself, everyone, and enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow, guys.
See you guys.